Hey, what's going on? It's Quinn David Furness. Welcome to my show. Quinn David Furness presents the Beantown Podcast for Thursday. Big belts to start working on a Miller Lite over here. Tough start. April 11th, 2024. What's happening? What's going on? How are you? My name is Quinn. I am the key grip, the showrunner, creator, producer, all that good stuff that you know and love of this program. Quinn David Furness presents the Beantown Podcast. Shout out to Pakistan, the great Islamic Republic. Thanks for making us the 112th ranked comedy podcast in the great nation of Pakistan. And listener discretion is advised. We're going through all of it real quick right here because I don't want to bury the lead. When you're listening to Quinn David Furness presents the Beantown Podcast, number one, we'll occasionally use some language. Number two, this podcast is objectively terrible. And get us across the finish line. Thank you to our sponsors, Home Pride Oregon, Cuts by Q, and the Samson Q2U series. Thanks for supporting this show. When God speaks, he uses a Samson. When God needs a home inspection, he calls Steve 541-410-0316. And when God needs a haircut, let me put a pin in that because I'm going to ask our special guest about what type of haircut he thinks the God would have, the Holy Father. So speaking of guests, it's been a hot second since we had guests on our program, but this is year after year one of my favorite programs. Welcome back to the show for our 7th annual Beantown Podcast Tax Special. Matthew Fiedler, welcome back. What's going on? What's happening? How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Glad to be back. 7 years, man. That's wild. Congrats on all these consecutive years. I remember back in the day when you're talking about starting up a podcast. And out of sheer determination and stubbornness, you've kept it going past probably, well, I know we started a joint podcast and that fizzled out there. So kudos to you for being very consistent. Avid listener, big time fan. Happy to be on the show with you. And I always look forward to these, even though I think that every year you give your disclaimers, I'll give mine as well. I'm not a tax professional. I don't know if that's required in terms to kind of hedge my liability here, but happy to be part of the show and share what little information I have.
Always putting yourself down, but we know you're the tax expert here. He's not a licensed certified professional, but that doesn't mean he's not knowledgeable. And I liked what you were saying about, wow, 7 years. It reminded me of, you know, certain things, particularly canned goods, have what they call a shelf life. And I like to envision the Beantown Podcast as that thing you've had on your shelf in the back of the fridge that you kind of remember that it's there once a month and you think about it for about 30 seconds and then you're like, it doesn't smell yet, so we'll just leave it there. And it is clearly past its shelf life, but
car, but then as time's gone on, you've aged like a fine wine.
Oh, that's very kind. I appreciate that. I suppose I would rather age like a fine wine than I don't know, I would have to go into my fridge and see what I actually have. I guarantee there's one or two things. I think I have a Sam Adams, like, pumpkin spice edition bottle of beer that I purchased in, you know, October of 2022, probably. And it's do you know the Bill Burr Sam Adams SNL sketch where he's like tasting all the different pumpkin beer in the grocery store? It's a fake commercial, and he's like, "Yeah, it tastes like shit, but whatever, it's free beer." So it's kind of how I feel about those pumpkin.
Did you buy a whole case of this pumpkin spice beer?
Probably it was probably on sale. I probably got it, you know, after we passed Thanksgiving or something, and it was kind of out of style. That's kind of my strategy. When I go to Jewel, I look for the red tags. That tells you you're getting a big deal. So, yeah, but it's tough to remember. I mean, it's been a year and a half, so who really knows? But, yeah, I've been known to try some questionable drinks in the name of a good deal. I think that's just my Furness genes. So.
Yeah, you and me both. Yeah. Hmm.
Well, I wanted to ask you, before I forget, we were talking a little bit about Cuts by Q and God's haircut. When you think of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, maybe separately, or, you know, God had three in one, what, I guess we have a general sense of what Jesus was rocking haircut style. He was kind of, you know, long and flowy, not too dissimilar from some of the styles you've rocked in the past. But when you think about God, what type of haircut are you envisioning?
I think you're right. Jesus, I picture long, flowy locks. And when you say not dissimilar from mine, I think my hair was just long. I don't think that argument can be made that it was flowy. It was also a very bad decision, as you probably can see going back. Just the other day, I saw a time hop on Facebook of how bad it was. And it was pretty bad. That's a question that I've never been asked and probably will never be asked again. So I want to give it a little bit of thought. I don't know. I think a good standard, just bald head, right?
Oh,
I think
God bald. Okay.
God has enough to do. He doesn't need to be bothered with, you know, hair or anything like that. So that would be my guess, I think.
Okay. I don't know if it's a hot take, because I just feel like any take is, you know, welcome in a bizarre question like this, but we'll make that our Beantown Podcast listener question of the week. Email us, beantownpodcast@yahoo.com. Again, that's beantown@yahoo.com. Let us know, hey, what hairstyle do you think God has when you think of God? Mine is like, envision like, and I don't typically try to name drop on this show, but I think this is a positive thing. I'm envisioning like a Paul Dixon kind of hairstyle. It's very, you know, very neat. It's not, you know, distracting from, you know, the miracles and the creations and stuff, but kind of, you know, I don't know, just very simple, classic, elegant. So
a little kind of tight, not a whole lot of styling needed, just kind
of. Yeah. And, you know, for, I guess probably about 90% of people who still hang on to the show probably do know who that is, who I just mentioned, but just, you know, imagine like a very, you know, 60-year-old white man, kind of nice, clean, tight trim. You know, you would think that someone who owns their own boutique barbershop would be able to articulate hairstyles better, but I'm more of an imagery guy. So you pull up the Cuts by Q, and yep, I say, you know, just show me a picture of what you look like, and whether it's Malcolm, what's the Theo from the Cosby Show, whatever his name is, he's got the high top, or maybe like I don't know, Paula Abdul in the 80s or something. I'll do my best to make it work. So
I kind of envision, and this is nothing against Cuts by Q, but I kind of envision you come in, you sit right down, and you show a picture of what you'd like, and you get what the artist wants you to have. You know, because I think that I might not know, you know, what kind of a masterpiece my hair could be. So I think that Cuts by Q, you probably just go in, you probably do what you think looks best, right?
I think that's accurate. I think Cuts by Q is partially barbershop, you know, boutique, and then also kind of like a public art sort of expression. So that's kind of the spin that we have, sort of what sets us apart from the competition. I find a lot of people, when they pay, if you're willing to pay a $20 flat rate cut for your hair, you're probably willing to put up with some artistic expression, if you will. So you can see.
How about this, Quinn? How about we set a date a year from today? And if we're going to have another tax special next year, this should be done through video with a haircut being done. I think that would be a pretty solid setup.
Who am I giving a haircut to?
I haven't decided. Okay. I was going to volunteer. It depends on what I have publicly going around that date. But
yeah,
it can be me.
Nine months before, 9 months after.
How about this? I have to provide someone to get it that you'll give a haircut to. It can be me unless I find a sacrifice.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
All right. I might need your help with the tech aspect of it. But when it comes to actually cutting the hair, I will sharpen my my steak knife and we'll be ready to go. So we'll put a pin in that. Well, right before we got on air, I promised Matthew that we would get right to it, and here we are, 9.5 minutes in. So we welcome Matthew onto the show every year around tax time, which is, what is April 15th, something like that, one of those days, to talk taxes. And we try to do, you know, different fun things every year, and we usually start with a semi-serious topic and then get into, you know, less serious things as we progress. So I have a couple different topics I want to hit on here, and let's start off with kind of the most serious of the different topics I have. So I don't know if this is public knowledge yet, but I'll break the news. Matthew got married in between the time you heard from him last year on the show and today. So congratulations are in order first and foremost to Matthew. But one of the things I've always legitimately been curious about and don't feel like I know that much about, I don't think it's super complicated necessarily, but I really don't know much about it. Getting married and what it means for your taxes. So, Matthew, talk to us a little bit about joint filing, what it is, pros and cons, anything there you got insight into. It would be great to hear your perspectives there.
Yeah, this is a very fresh take here, considering, thanks for the congrats. Considering that I recently was able to find someone who would like to spend the rest of their life with me, which was a big accomplishment. Taxes are a large part of this conversation. Sometimes it can be beneficial, and sometimes there can be some drawbacks in filing jointly with your spouse. Joint filing, it's obviously a tax filing option that's available to anybody who's married. In the event that you have a different household structure, there could be a better tax filing for you, probably a head of household or something of that nature. But the benefit is you can combine both your incomes and also the exemptions, any deductions, credits, and things like that. So whereas, you know, if I were to file my taxes as a single, just, you know, one W-2 type of employee, I might not be able to get itemized deductions. I'd probably take a standard deduction, which is just a flat rate that everybody, you know, would take. And essentially what that does is it takes the income that you've earned all year, and the government says, there's this portion that we're not going to even tax you on. We're going to, you know, cut that off the top, and then you'll just be taxed on the remaining amount. If you can increase the amount of deductions that you have to surpass that standard deduction, that's to your benefit. And there's a plethora of things that fall in those itemized deductions, but sometimes it's a lot easier if you and your partner have separate, you know, things that you can that qualify as deductions to kind of pool those together, if you will. So sometimes it can be beneficial. Sometimes it's not too dissimilar than if you were both to file separately. And what I would say is, it kind of depends each year. Your tax picture will look a little bit different each year, depending on, you know, what you have in terms of interest expense, medical expenses, donations, and things like that. But there is a potential for lower taxes. So if you combine incomes, it could put some, you know, some married couples in a lower tax bracket, which is great, right? That's kind of the goal. If you can swing it to be in a lower tax bracket, but then maximize your take-home pay. And one of the other benefits of filing jointly is there's different benefits that come with that. There are different tax credits, like the earned income tax credit is one, child and dependent care, I believe, is another credit that's still available to people. And it makes you easier. It's easier to qualify with those higher income thresholds for joint filers. And another plus is if you're going to two different accountants or the same one, you might save a little bit of money on the tax filing fees and tax prep because you're filing one return opposed to two, right? A drawback, I guess I would say, is, and I obviously this is for a marriage where both people like each other, but both parties are equally responsible for the tax, you know, the tax bill at the end of the day, especially if you're filing together. Both your names are on that piece of paper that's submitted to the IRS. So if there's any audits or penalties or anything like that, the IRS will be going through both of your finances, you know, in the event that they're not merged to that degree. So that's maybe a slight disadvantage potentially. I've never seen this personally, but there's been situations I've heard of where, you know, there might be a spouse who actually has a good job, W-2, you know, is on the up and up, and then you have a spouse who maybe sells things that they shouldn't on street corners and things like that, just from a liability perspective, I would say file separately. It's not worth it. I mean, you know, there's maybe a legal headache in there. And as an accountant or a tax filer, we have a fiduciary role. I don't believe you'd rat them out to the legal authorities. I think there's a little bit of ethics in play there, but the recommendation in that type of situation would be filed separately. In fact, for me personally, my spouse has a little bit of student loan debt, and we pushed our legal marriage date into 2024, opposed to getting married into 2023, just so we could kick out basically the income-driven repayments for her loans. So instead of, you know, filing jointly and the federal loan administrator saying, hey, we've got two incomes here, we can basically just pay income-driven repayments under her income because she'll be filing separately for 2023, and I have as well. So it kind of depends, I guess, is the main thing. And as near as I can tell, and I would say consult, you know, with your tax professional, but there isn't a requirement if you file jointly to file jointly the following year. So it's something that each year you probably should evaluate with your tax professional. And there's benefits and there's maybe some drawbacks. I think on average, most married couples who have shared finances will probably file jointly for that reason. But you can also file married separately as well.
And I suppose you could envision a situation where, you know, it's April, you know, 12th or something. It's the weekend. You get a glass of wine. You cuddle up next to your lover. You break out your W-2s. And I like that. I like that. It's always easy to have those built-in activities.
I would say make sure you get all the numbers entered and all that good stuff before you get your second glass of wine. You know what I mean? We want to be accurate too. So we don't want to fat finger anything as the night carries on, right?
Yeah, it's a good call. It's a good call. Very, very informative stuff from our seasoned tax, not a tax professional, a tax expert, if you will. I got another tax topic I wanted to ask you about. Again, something I'm genuinely curious about is I'm not a public policy expert, but I know you've dabbled in it. You probably heard of public policy before, so I'm going to ask.
Heard of it.
You,
yeah, I'm passing.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you this question. There's five U.S. states that currently don't have sales tax, and to me, five is enough where it's not just kind of one random, you know, one of those U.S. states you never heard of, and it's like, well, yeah, who cares if they have sales tax or not? Five seems like a what we would call in the industry a critical mass. So I'm curious, what's your take on it? Why do you think there are five states out there that have chosen to have no sales tax versus the other 45 who do have a sales tax?
I think they're just trying to be different, you know? There's probably more to it than that. There's a few things that I can maybe think of as to why. But I'll say this. You mentioned, I mean, full disclosure, so you gave me a heads up that this might be a question that's asked, right? And to be fair, I did not know which states they were off the top of my head, except for I think I got two of the five. So not a great batting average there. But a lot of these states are states that half of them – are we doing a poll for the listeners, or are we going to let the cat out of the bag on which states actually don't have sales tax?
Well, sure. They you know, they could probably already play along in their heads with the headline of the question. But yeah, if you're playing along at home, you're listening, and you want to guess what the five U.S. states are that don't have sales tax, you can pause your podcast here and have a think over, if you will. But Matthew, I'll let you proceed.
Yeah. So the five states that don't have sales tax currently are Alaska, Delaware, Montana. Those are the three that I got, but I did not guess New Hampshire or Oregon. So all of those have generally no sales tax. And the interesting thing about this is it's not 100% accurate. There is sales tax on certain items. We would call them basically like the sin tax. So anything, any sale of alcohol or tobacco, that would include a sales tax as well. But there's a few odd reasons maybe why states would not have a sales tax. And a lot of this is just because maybe they already have already diverse revenue streams. A lot of states use sales tax to supplement their funding for whether it's infrastructure or a lot of the municipality grants that are afforded and things like that. But if there's other sources of revenue for that state, such as like higher property taxes or higher income taxes, we don't see, you know, Florida on here as, you know, booting on sales tax. So there's certain things that those states will probably keep in mind just in relation to their revenue streams, right? So thinking at it from an operational standpoint, they probably can carry on without, you know, those sales taxes. And I'll say there's two parts. It could be part marketing, part economic, you know, philosophy. I think some people argue that not having sales tax encourages spending and attracts business, you know, consumers and people from states around that area to visit and go there more frequently. And that kind of helps boost the local economy. You can see that with Alaska for sure, right? Some of these less traveled states. I think that's kind of part of it too. It kind of makes them stand out about a little bit. The one thing about Florida, when you're talking taxes, I feel like everybody is understands that there's no income tax there on a state level, and that's a great marketing move for anybody, you know, who wants to or is considering moving to Florida. You know, consider that in your tax planning and your overall, maybe your retirement picture as well. I think that would be beneficial. So, as to why, I don't know 100%, but those are kind of my gut feels on why it would be those states, and maybe why. Again, probably the more diverse revenue streams that they're pulling in outside of sales tax dollars, and then more of an economic philosophy on how they want to approach it as a state. Mm.
And this probably varies from state to state, but let's say you live, on the border of New Jersey and Delaware, and you want to make a Costco run across the border and stock up on some goods and then, you know, drive back home. Yeah. Is there anything technically illegal about that, or does it really vary from state to state, or is it perfectly legal?
I think it's perfectly legal. I do it all the time. I used to live in I still live in Northern Illinois, but just a little bit south from where I was in the north. But yeah, I go up to Wisconsin all the time for cheap gas. You know, obviously different tax rates on that. There's no requirements. It's different than what you would see as like an income tax, right? Where that's based on residency, where a sales tax is just where you buy the product. All the your retailers will be remitting that sales tax, or should be remitting that sales tax to the appropriate state, and kind of taking care of all that due diligence for you, right at, you know, right when you hand over your card or the cash. So no issues from a consumer standpoint on that.
And then one more thing here. Do you ever land on that luxury tax space in Monopoly?
I think it's
between Park Place and Boardwalk.
It's interesting though, because I forget, I've played the digital or the version on the Switch probably the most frequently. And it seems like that's just a flat rate of like $75 or
that's
something,
right,
like that.
Yeah.
In the actual game, I thought it was a percentage.
Well, the luxury tax, if I recall correctly, is $75, but there's also income tax, which I think is maybe in between the purples right at the beginning. And that's either, I think it's you pay $200 or you pay 10% of your bank, I think is how it goes. So, yeah, I think that's the one where you kind of,
And to be fair, that's all wonky because I don't know how time works in Monopoly, right? But assume if you go around the board one time, is that the equivalent of a year? You're not paying taxes every
year. It feels like it takes a year to go around when you're playing Monopoly.
Yeah,
that's my least favorite board game.
Therein lies the flaw, right? So you're not paying taxes every year or every turn. And then the second part is you're not paying based on your income. You're paying at what's in your bank account, which would be scary. And that would probably, I mean, if that was the case in the U.S., it would force all of us probably to invest in real estate or other assets so we don't have cash lying around to be taxed on. But
yeah, I could buy 1/100th of a house in Saugatuck. We were talking about that earlier. And
we can make bump that up 1%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I got one more game, one more trivia. We like to finish with some lighthearted stuff here. And, you know, listeners from last year's program will recall our groundbreaking game, Tax Facts or Wax. So it's going to be a little, this is more of a traditional trivia game this year. There's no translations involved, but it's tax season. So I thought I would ask Matthew 5 questions about what I'm calling tax season. Actually, there might be, 5 questions. This is tax trivia about Charles Watson, member of the Manson family and one of
Don't say that. That was like one of the only things I knew about.
Well, no, that wasn't one of my questions, so you should be good.
No, but you're taking all the low-hanging fruit. Now I'm not going to have any good answers for the rest of these questions.
You know, I think there's like at least 3 of these I feel like you have a good shot at getting without knowing anything about Charles Tex Watson.
Okay.
And yeah, I'm not trying to hold you to that standard and not saying you can't get more or less, but just look,
I think
there's one here, spoiler alert, it's a second question that seems really tough, and maybe it's just because I am not familiar with this at all, but we'll see how you do. I got a good feeling. I believe in you. So you ready for question number one?
I'm ready for question number
one. Okay, so as his name implies, Charles Tex Watson was from Texas, and when he was a teenager, he attended this state college in Denton, Texas, known at least in my circles largely for its music program. Which school did Tex Watson attend in Denton, Texas for college?
What the hell? I have no idea. I'm going to be honest. Ever since graduating school and, like, not applying, my exposure to colleges, I haven't watched a single March Madness game either.
Well, you missed it.
So my wealth of knowledge here is very poor.
Let me give you the initials, okay? Remember, this is a public state college in Texas. So here are the initials: UNT.
Sorry, I was chewing on a cracker. University of Texas, but what is it? UNT.
N as in nocturne.
N as in North.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
That would be it. University of North Texas, very good music program there in Denton, Texas. Tex himself wasn't much of a musician, at least the Wikipedia article didn't mention anything about that. But who? Maybe he was, I don't know. Maybe he was in the pep band, not sure. But okay,
well,
you're...
I know that Manson actually, I don't know a ton about him, but he was friends with one of the Beach Boys and was trying to make a go of his music career back before things got a little squirrely.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, that might come back later. Who knows? Question number 2. This is the tough one for me, at least. But if you get this, it's 5 extra bonus points. So here we go. In 1967, still in Texas, Tex began working for this now defunct airline.
Now defunct airline. What airline was around?
And I'm gonna just
1967.
I'm gonna, we don't have the same brain, but I'm gonna let you know that I have never heard of this defunct airline. So
yeah, there's probably a good chance that I have not either. Then.
It looks like it would be Scottish, perhaps, based off of the name.
that narrows it down. Thank you.
It's not. I'm assuming you don't have any guesses here,
and I,
This is one of those where I can't think of anything that would be like, this will make it easier. So the answer for question two, the airline that is now defunct, is called Braniff International. That's B-R-A-N as in Nocturne, I-F-F, International.
So, I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, me neither. There were limited things on his Wikipedia article, so this was just what I asked about.
What did he do there? Was he a...
He was like a baggage handler or luggage or something like that. That's how he got so strong.
I got you. Looked on those bags. Well, I don't think that... there's probably more strict limits on how much you could carry. Or maybe I'm thinking the other way, right? I think that things were probably different back in the day. Obviously, the security protocols weren't as high. So maybe you could just... Whatever the hell you wanted, you could bring.
Potentially,
So your skis, your bowling balls, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, maybe that was good cardio for him.
Well, especially down in Texas, anything goes.
Yeah, everything's bigger down there. So that's right. I can imagine
bigger skis, bigger bowling balls.
Yeah, the 22-pound bowling ball. Yeah,
22 pounds. How much skiing do you think they do down in Texas?
Can't be much.
Sand skiing. All right, down a gentle hill. Okay, next up, I think you're on this one. I think you got a good shot here, and this was news to me, but it sounds like you came in knowing this one. So Tex was first introduced to the Manson family when he picked up hitchhiker Dennis Wilson from this band.
Oh, Beach Boys.
There you go. Ding, 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 ding.
Nice.
Yeah, there we go. You're 2 for 3.
So is that how, I wonder if that's how he kind of got into the kind of the Manson.
That's exactly what happened. Yep. Okay. Dennis Wilson, I read this yesterday and I didn't really retain it, but he knew Charles Manson, or they had connections together, something like that, out in Los Angeles. And that's how Tex first got introduced. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen Love and Mercy? The Paul Dano when he played Brian Wilson?
I don't think I have. That came out fairly recently, right? Like within the last 5 years or no?
I think at this point it's been closer to like 6 or 7, but
okay.
I think within a decade. I've never seen it either, but I like Paul Dano and I've heard that it's really good. And I don't know that much about Brian Wilson, so I should set aside some time to check it out when I get the chance. So. All right.
Brian Wilson, and then you say Dennis Wilson?
And there's another brother, too, I think.
Okay.
But Brian is
the key, like,
yeah.
Beach Boys sound kind of guy, though.
Yeah, he kind of did everything, and then everyone else was kind of just there to perform, is my understanding of it.
So. Gotcha.
Okay, we're going to jump way into the future here, 50 years, and this is very recent, and I think it's kind of a weird question, but I think you can get it. In May 2023, from prison, where he still is, if you can believe this, Tex began the Abounding Love podcast, which featured a series of these delivered between 1977 and 1984 at the Chapel of the California Men's Colony. What did he deliver that he then featured on this podcast he started last year?
Poems?
Not poems. It's more appropriate to the setting where he was at, a chapel of the men's colony.
Music. Christian music.
It's like music, but without the music. Focus more on the words.
Oh. Acapella. I have no idea.
Focus
more on the words.
Like if you had words, but it wasn't music, in a church setting.
Oh, so he preached.
Yeah, there you go. Sermons is the answer we're looking for.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. He preached.
It's a good word.
Yeah,
he did a series of sermons. Apparently, he's a born again Christian now, and I haven't personally checked out the Abounding Love podcast, but I might, we'll see. But there you go. Yeah, you can have a prison from podcast now.
Work. How do you start a podcast in prison? Like,
I don't know.
Access to all that stuff. I don't know.
I guess maybe once you've been in prison for like 60 years, they give you a little bit more leeway with the recording technology. Yeah.
Maybe.
All right, I got one more question for you here. I'm not sure if you've seen this movie. I'm going to guess you have, but it's the most recent media depiction of Tex Watson. So Tex was portrayed by this actor in Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I have not seen this movie, actually.
Ooh.
It's on my list, but I have not seen this movie.
That's going to be a much tougher question then.
Yeah, I have no idea. I know that, Brad Pitt is in it.
Yeah.
And I'm spacing on the name of the other main actor.
Leo.
Leo, okay. And Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Is the stunt double for Leo, correct?
That's right, yeah.
That's about all I know about that movie.
If you get when you you know hop off this call, go check out the cast list because it's absolutely insane. But I can get you to the answer on clues. I'll say this: there's a good chance you hadn't heard of this guy, let's say 2 years ago, but he really burst onto the scene in a very heavily publicized biopic that came out last year. Involved a lot of music and a guy from Mississippi.
A lot of music and a guy from Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. A very larger than life star. They made a biopic about this guy, and this young hotshot actor portrayed him in the film.
Austin Butler?
There you go. Austin Butler portrayed Tex Watson in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Wow. Yeah. What's the connection of him to the movie, I guess? Is he like a pass-through character or?
Oh, no. Tex Watson?
Yeah.
No, he was deep in the Manson family with, you know, Squeaky Fromm and.
No. Yeah. But Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, what's the connection? Is it like. Is that a large part of the storyline? I guess.
Oh,
I like,
you've never seen it. Okay.
Dude,
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is about the Manson murders.
Okay. All right. Well,
yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah. It's a great ending. The third act is classic. It's a long film, like 3 hours, as you know, many Tarantino pictures are, but it's worth it. It's probably higher up on my list of favorite Tarantino films.
Yeah. Side of 2024 and didn't realize that was the plot line to one of the larger movies. What, it came out like 2 years ago?
It came out in 2019.
Oh, okay. So a little bit more. See, I feel like I'm always bad with movies when I always think it's more recent than it is, and I just let time slip without catching up on all these films.
That happens to me all the time with people who've passed away, celebrities, and I'll be like, oh yeah, that happened last year, right? And then I look at Wikipedia and it was like 2020, and I'm like, wow.
The days are long, but the years are short, right?
That hits home. That feels very true. Well, we're gonna hop off in a second here, way over time. I apologize for that, but I mentioned I might ask you about this, not the OJ part, but reality TV. I know you've been known to dabble here and there from time to time, which is different than it wasn't a thing for us growing up. I don't want to speak for you, but there was no sort of reality TV in my household growing up, and now I watch a lot of The Housewives, Vanderpump Rules. I gotta watch two episodes ago. I'm curious, anything you're watching lately that we should maybe check out?
So here's an interesting take. If you were to ask my significant other if I watch these shows, she will say yes, and I'm very invested in them. I don't feel like that's the case. I feel like I'll be working in the office and come out, and these shows are just on, you know, when she's off of work and, you know, winding down for the night. And even if I start working out there, anything could be on the TV and I would get distracted. That's just the type of person I am. So there's my disclaimer, but on a very real note, I'm aware that she's watching Vanderpump Rules and most of The Housewives at this point. I just can't keep all the Housewives straight. They all look about the same, to be fair. And then one of the interesting things that we watched recently was Naked and Afraid.
Ooh.
But it was like Lone Survivor or something like that. So we binged through that. After a while, you can't tell that they're naked. They blur out a lot. But it's basically like them dropping, I don't know if it was 12 people, like in the middle of nowhere. And then they had to survive for 30-something days just with maybe one or two essentials. And that's pretty interesting. It's like Survivor, but to the next level.
Are they still making that show?
I think it's still on. They have different seasons where it's just like fans that try to see if they can do it. Some people get like dysentery. It's tough. Yeah, but it's like interesting.
Like Oregon Trail.
Yeah, I feel this is the basically the side of me that's not grounded in any semblance of reality. Watching these shows, it's like, oh, I feel like I could do that. I mean, I prefer clothes, but the survival things I feel like I could do. In reality, I would probably die on day three or four. But it is an interesting show. I feel like it's a little bit more fun to watch than some of the Housewives. I'll say this. I think that if they have like one or two big fights a season and that they're carried on way too long.
Yeah.
I think these people just need to, you know, kind of forgive, move on, or just stop being around the people that are pissing them off. That's my take from an outside observer, but you don't get reality TV that way. So
you got to have the drama.
You got to have the drama. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Matthew. 7 years in running, really. And you've been on other, you know, podcast episodes and Beantown Unplugged, a great concert. If you haven't checked that out, you got to go find that.
Oh, no,
you know, tax day is.
I don't feel like I showed up for the team well in that podcast.
It was everything really came together. I was getting sick, and I think that was when you put some whiskey or something in coffee, and it got cold, and then I still tried to drink it, and just not
a good
cold. It was tough. It was tough, but you're always a great team player and a better guitarist, and appreciate you coming on that program. Gosh, that's already been 6 years probably, but it, you know, tax day, couple days away. Any last second tips before we close the show?
Yeah, make sure your taxes are filed. That's kind of the main thing. Another closing thought, I guess, would be worst case scenario. If you always get money back, like a refund, and I hesitate to even say this because this really shouldn't be an option, but there aren't late penalties for filing your taxes late if the IRS owes you money. Something to be mindful of, but I would always shoot for trying to hit that April 15th deadline. And then I guess just more big picture on a personal finance standpoint, because I just feel like in my time as an auditor and auditing employee benefit plans and just the state of the world we live in today, my guess is if things are trending the way they are now, there's a chance that, you know, you and I, Quinn, will never see Social Security, at least in the same capacity that maybe our parents or our grandparents have seen it, right? So being more proactive in your retirement savings is important. I saw a figure the other day. If you are 20 years old, if you put a dollar away and invest it in the S&P, a blended or an index fund, that has the opportunity to be $88 when you're 65. And when you're 30, a dollar you put away has the ability to be $23 when you're 65. So it's not too late. If you're 30 or 35, honestly, anything you put away today, obviously, you know, consult with your company. I'm sure that if there's a 401k plan or 403b or any type of retirement plan that's offered by your employer, you should have the ability to, you know, connect with an advisor to see what funds best serve you. But make sure you put money away. I think we're under the pressure from inflation and all these things that are pulling us in different directions, especially you and I, Quinn, at this stage in our life. You know, our lives look a lot different than they did 5 years ago and 10 years ago. So maybe making ends meet could be harder. But a few ways to look at it would be invest in yourself for the future. A lot of people want to, you know, put away money for maybe their kids someday, and that's great. That's awesome. But I think having a well-rounded retirement plan will serve you and potentially your kids well in the future. I don't think you want to raise children to maybe take care of you financially in the later years of your life. And a lot of the statistics that have come out recently seem to indicate that might be where a lot of Americans are headed. So being mindful of what you're spending, and a lot of that can come down to just being tracking your expenses in a budget app, or just being very, you know, proactive in reviewing things that you're spending and have a strict budget that you stick to. But that's another thing I think that's very important as a takeaway. I think tax planning and planning for your retirement are things that nobody likes to do them, maybe. Some of us do, I guess. But by and large, I think that most people don't like to do that. But I think if you just invest a little bit of time, a little bit of money, in the future, you'll be happy that you did.
Excellent. Sage advice, as always, from our seasoned tax expert, Matthew Feather. Matt, thanks again for coming on the program. I'll keep you on for 1 second here as we hop off the recording. But thank you again. Appreciate your time. For all of us here at Beantown Podcast, Beantown Networks, my name is Quinn David Furness. Don't forget, email us, beantownpodcast@yahoo.com. We have our horse special coming up in just a few short weeks here. Get your listener suggestions in for our top 10 list. That goes for you too, Matt. You got any horse names you've been saving up? Now is the year to
unload. For a whole year.
It's got a whole backlog. All right. Everyone, thank you for supporting my show. Thank you for listening, and hope you stay safe, stay sane. No outro music yet. Still low budget. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.